Hey, podcast listeners. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and on To the Best of Our Knowledge this week, we're thinking about summer travel. And we've got an interview that would be really great to listen to if you happen to be on a plane, or more likely, waiting for one. Air travel is pretty mundane today, but imagine being one of the very first people to see the Earth from the sky, not in an airplane, but in a hot air balloon. Steve Paulson brings us the story of the daring and crazy men and women who invented hot air ballooning. Here's his conversation with cultural historian Richard Holmes about the book Falling Downwards. It's part adventure story and part cautionary tale about the dangers of flying high in the sky.
My sense is that today, ballooning mostly is a curiosity. But what I found amazing as I was reading your book is how much ballooning once captured the public imagination, especially in the 19th century. Can you give us some sense of how widespread this fascination was?
Yeah, it is true. I mean, most people think flying began, let's say, with the Wright brothers, Kitty Hawk, 1903. But actually, people were flying in balloons for 120 years before then. And it all began in the 1780s, 1783, when a paper manufacturer, paper bag manufacturer called Montgolfier, two brothers, discovered that if they filled a very large paper bag with hot air, it would take off. And it would take off with amazing power. I think the first one they launched went to something like 5,000 feet, and they suddenly realized, we've got something here. And within that year, 1783, they'd brought their invention to Paris, and they launched the first man-carrying balloon, amazing balloon, 60 foot high, that flew right across the River Seine, across Paris. And that created a complete sensation because it was thought that here is the invention of an utterly new form of transportation. And I remember the president of the Royal Society in London, Joseph Banks, wrote a paper saying, this is the biggest invention since ships, okay?
What were those early balloons made of?
The first ones, the Montgolfiers, were literally made of paper stuck together. And then they started making them of silk and taffeta. And the early ones were actually buttoned together. And then they developed various forms of technology. They could put particular kinds of glue and so on them. And a very important point, they were also doing hydrogen balloons. And they realized that it was a gas which is roughly something like 14 times lighter than air. And so most of those early balloons were made of silk and inflated with hydrogen. And actually, that maintained that way of flying balloons really throughout the 19th century.
Now, there's something deeply romantic about this history of ballooning. I mean, it's beautiful, it's mysterious, and it's also dangerous. Is that what drew you to this story?
Well, it's beautiful. The fact that it's a completely different experience from flying, particularly in modern airliners, all right? It's calm. You see the world laid out beneath you in a completely different way. It's a sort of meditative experience. And you see nature, you see the light, the way the sunlight falls on the ground very, very differently. And you see the patterns of the agriculture and the patterns of cities. You see the kind of evolution of mankind on the earth in a quite extraordinary way. So it's visionary from that point of view. You've mentioned danger. Yeah, technically, I know there have been these terrible disasters like Luxor and one in Wellington. It does occasionally happen. But actually, statistically, I think it's certainly a lot safer than riding on a bicycle through New York. That's for sure.
Well, there are, though, some extraordinary stories. I mean, we'll talk about the early history, but even more recently, you tell the story of a Catholic priest in Brazil a few years ago who took off in a balloon. He was trying to raise money for some humanitarian cause. He went up to 19,000 feet.
Yeah.
And then he disappeared.
It's extraordinary. Sorry, 2008, Padre Balanero, it was called, yes. This guy was raising money for, it was a truck driver's rest stop, okay? It was partly just give truck drivers rest, and I think it was a sort of a kind of spiritual restroom as well. You know, the way you could just calm down. And he took off, and he had a GPS navigation equipment. He had a cell phone and so on. He was talking to the Coast Guards. It went too high, and then it went out over the sea, and he was lost, and his body was found 2 or 3 months later. But it had an extraordinary effect, this, and he did indeed raise a lot of money. And people think maybe he was a saint, that guy, amazingly brave to do. So that kind of story runs right through ballooning, people who do it for absolutely altruistic motives. But there are also others who are sort of showmen, and some of them are scientists, and some of them are crazy exhibitionist people.
And then there are some people who actually use balloons to escape to safety. And you tell a remarkable story of two East German families who got out of the Iron Curtain in a balloon. Can you describe what happened there?
Yeah, this is 1979. Two East German families wanted to escape over the war into West Germany, passionately wanted to do this, and they decided to build their own balloon. I tell the story, it was very difficult for them to do. They had to get hold of the equipment because the secret police, the equivalent of the Stasi in East Germany, were onto if anything peculiar like that happened. So they had to pretend they were members of a camping and a sailing club, but they got hold of different kinds of canvas and materials, non-flammable materials, which helped them in the end. And they built, I think, three versions of this balloon with their own homemade propane burner. And in autumn 1979, they did at night successfully launch. Can you imagine? Two families with, I think they had three or four kids, one of whom was a child in arms. And I found the photographs of this because they did successfully at night fly over, not the wall, but the wire fencing, which is absolutely was lethal in those days, which was mined and everything, and searchlights. Amazing dramas, like the balloon caught fire when at 9,000 feet, but they managed to control it. And when they came down, they didn't know which side of the wire. It was still night. They didn't know if they'd made it or not. And it's very dramatic the way they tell it. They got down in one piece. The kids were okay. One of the grown-ups broke their leg, but otherwise they're okay. But they didn't know which side of the fence they were. And the story is they walked across the field. They could see there was a big electricity pylon, one of the most dangerous things, incidentally, for balloonists. They'd missed it. They walked up to it and had a notice on the bottom, danger of death, etc. And underneath it had the name of the firm, and it was a West German electricity firm, and they knew they'd made it. And there's one other story I can tell you about escaping, if you want,
sure,
which goes back in history. One of the great moments of ballooning, throw yourself back into France in 1870. The Franco-Prussian War has been declared, and the amazingly efficient Prussian army surround the city of Paris. It takes them 2.5 weeks, completely seal off the city of Paris, all right? And there is no communication. Obviously, we're not in radio, mobile phones, anything like that. The only system would be telegraph. All those lines were cut. All the bridges were cut. The river was fenced off. 2.5 million people in Paris, completely isolated. And the idea of the Prussian army was simply to starve them into submission. But the worst thing was they had no communications with the outside world at all. And it was a despairing situation until there were a group of French balloonists who suddenly said, there's one way open, the traditional, the great way that we pioneered, the air. So they built very, very fast. They took over the railway stations, those big, high-roofed buildings. They were no use because the trains were stopped. And they used those to manufacture mass-produced balloons. And in the space of 4.5 months, this winter siege, hungry, everybody hungry. All the trees in the Bois de Boulogne were cut down. They killed all the horses. There wasn't a horse alive in Paris, so they ate them. A desperate situation. And the one thing they could do was get balloon messages out. They sent out, in the end, 67 balloons, and they carried basically airmail, and they carried, in the end, over 2 million letters out. And they carried certain key politicians who were going to help with the revival of France, some scientific equipment. It was very dangerous. They had to gain enough height to get over the Prussian lines. The Prussians had the big Krupp guns that would fire at the balloons, but they got 67 of them out. And, of course, it didn't matter in which direction they went. The old problem of balloons, they're not good transport because you can start from A, but you can never get to B, right? You go, you leave A and you go to X and you don't know where. But for this purpose, all you had to do was fly over maybe 60 miles to clear the Prussian lines in any direction. And those balloons, quite amazingly, they went all over France. The first balloon landed somewhere near Tours, and it had a letter, wait for this, to the London Times. saying your readers will want to know what the situation is in Paris. Here it is. They also invented the first airmail newspaper. The Figaro ran it. And I should have added, the balloons also carried pigeons. And so they could carry messages back into Paris, letters. So they created, for that 4.5 months, this amazing airmail system. So again, ballooning gives you a completely unexpected view of history and that moment in history.
Yeah, that is a great story. And one thing that comes through is, I mean, the history of ballooning is the history of great stories. I mean, going back to the early days, and I want to talk about some of the early entertainers, because back in the in the early 1800s, there were people like, well, there was a French woman, Sophie Blanchard.
Sophie Blanchard, yes.
Tell me about her.
Well, often, again, when I'm talking about this, a voice from the back says, what about the women? All right. Was this a boys only? No, it was not in any way. And Sophie Blanchard, who was obviously French, and she began ballooning just around 1800, when it's still the period of Napoleon and so on. And she was the most extraordinary character. She was this little petite girl, really, and because she began very, very young in her teens and 20s. And there was this very shy, timid young woman. But once she got in the air, she was amazingly courageous, absolutely reckless in a way. And she designed her own silk balloons. These are hydrogen balloons. And I have in a picture of the book of the basket she designed, which you would not believe. I describe it as like a large champagne bucket. It was tiny. It was silver. She was just big enough for her to sit curled up in it. She claimed to have spent overnight up in the air sleeping in her champagne bucket. She used to wear these wonderful white, elegant, tight dresses with big feather hats so she could be seen. So she would go up in this tiny little champagne bucket basket. And then, this is what she became famous for. Remember, she's in a hydrogen balloon, right?
Right.
Hydrogen, one of the most inflammable gases known on Earth, right? What she did with that was she started taking fireworks up, okay? And she built more and more complicated rigs, sort of booms. So she would go up over the parks, particularly over Paris, and she would do these aerial firework displays. Crazy, beautiful, very effective. And the really interesting thing about Sophie Blanchard, she was so good at it that Napoleon, who was then emperor, made her the official balloonist of the French Empire. And he used her for any ceremonial events. And she gave these wonderful displays all over the Luxembourg, the Tivoli, all those big gardens. And they became more and more complicated. And she had a tremendous fan club. And then in 1819, the inevitable happened. Her balloon caught fire and she crashed onto her roofs in a street in Paris and died. She's got a rather neglected but very beautiful monument. If anybody's in Paris, ask for Sophie Blanchard's monument in Père Lachaise, a very beautiful tomb with a kind of balloon figure mounted above it. And she still has a following. I discovered once when she was flying in Italy, she landed in a little alpine mountain village. But from that one landing, they have a Sophie Blanchard Day to this day.
Wow.
They have a celebration there.
Yeah.
And I think somebody's making a little animated movie about it. So she was a very good example of the early entertainers and very interesting woman, I think.
That's Richard Holmes talking with Steve Paulson about his book, Falling Upwards, How We Took to the Air. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and if you like conversations with writers, thinkers, and cultural figures, you should be a regular listener. For more episodes of To the Best of Our Knowledge, check our podcast feed. You'll find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you download your favorite podcasts. To the Best of Our Knowledge is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio, which is based in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks to audio engineer Kirill Owen and to our distributor, Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.